you want to be healthier, yet you just don't know what to do. All these shows telling you this and that, but nothing seems to work. Well, listen close. Golden State Media Concepts has got something great for you. The health and wellness podcast dedicated to workout trends, healthy eating habits, diet, and everything about healthy living. Join us in our banters as we help you not just live life to the fullest, but live it to the healthiest.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Golden State Media Concepts Health and Wellness Podcast. I'm your host, Pauline, and this episode, I wanted to start out discussing some new things. So last episode, we discussed New Year's resolutions and being New Year, New Us, and part of that is we have all, yes, each and every single one of us have gained a new organ. And you guys are so cool that we didn't even have to do anything to gain this new organ. So now, first off, let me describe to you, let me give you the definition of an organ. So an organ is a part of an organism that is typically self-contained and has a specific vital function, such as the heart or liver in humans. Okay, so that's to kind of give you an idea of what an organ is. And so the main thing is that it has a specific vital function, okay? And it's usually self-contained. So like your heart pumps the blood through our bodies, okay? Things like that. So that is what an organ is. And so this, it has been officially decided that we have gained a new organ. And so it's basically, and now it's not something that just was like placed into our bodies overnight. You know how U2 downloaded their album onto all iPhone, like Apple products. Remember when that happened? And that you couldn't delete the album off of your playlist. It just was there. It's not something like that. It's actually an organ that has always been there. It is the mesentery organ, okay? And basically, it is, it connects your intestine to your abdomen. That's what it does. Now, before, it was just considered, it was just considered kind of like these folds there. It wasn't classified as having a specific vital function. And we didn't really know what exactly all it did. It was just kind of like folds in your system. And it's funny because Leonardo da Vinci actually has drawings of the mesentery organ. So he was way, again, far, 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 far ahead of his time. It's only now that we are catching up with something such as that. And so if you Google, you can see what the mesentery organ looks like and how it functions. Now, so basically it links our gut to the rest of our body. And it's very, very important because it carries blood and lymphatic fluid through the intestine and the rest of the body. It also maintains the position in which our intestines sit within our body. So that's very, very important, so that it stays connected to our abdominal wall without being in direct contact. So it's all about the connection, okay? And which is, of course, very, very important, because without that, then you would potentially have waste just within your body, which is definitely not good. And so so before, it was considered just kind of like a membrane there. It wasn't really considered its own organ. So this is actually quite a discovery. And the reason why it's so important and the reason why it's been getting a lot of talk, especially within the scientific world and the science world, because like here, like in us common world, it's just fun to say, oh, we gained a new organ, cool, cool, cool. But within the world of biology and within the world of scientists who are always working so hard and doing research in ways to better our lifestyles, it's very, very big. It's a very big deal, because one, it's now opening a whole new field of science, because now we can actually, you can actually study and focus on just the mesentery organ, and you can just focus on ways to, like I said, it's a whole new door of science, and we don't have any mesentery scientists at this time, but eventually it's going to be able to be where you can just focus on just, you know how some people just focus on the heart, some doctors, surgeons, and scientists focus on the liver, what may have you. And so this is going to open up its own new field of medical study. And it's also going to help, they're looking for it. And why this is such a big deal within the medical community is because it's going to help with diagnosing issues in a less invasive way to assess them. So before, it may, you may have had abdominal problems due to the mesentery function that they might not have known about before. And they're just assuming it's just your stomach or it's just your intestine. But now we're going to be able to hone in and focus more in on this organ now. And so it's going to be very, very nice. They're going to do some colonoscopy to start mapping out the mesentery organ. So it's going to be, I'm actually pretty excited because, like I said, I think it's going to be great that now that they're able to hone in and focus in on one area rather than attacking or, you know, looking for the problem everywhere else. We can start honing in onto where, especially when it comes to surgery, when it comes to making certain diagnosis. It's very, very nice. And it can also help play in a factor on cancer, inflammatory bowel disease, cardiovascular disease, as well as diabetes, obesity. So they're really going to start opening this whole new field to see just exactly how the mesentery, and at this time, there's not much known about it. And so I think that's the other really cool thing about the discovery of and the classification of this organ is that there's going to be so much opportunity for us to diagnose and for doctors to help treat us in more effective ways than, you know, just treating the stomach when it's actually stemming. The problem is actually stemming from this organ. So I am very, very excited about that and looking forward to in the next couple of decades seeing the advancements and where medicine is going to be now due to the official classification of this organ. And so with that, we are going to take it to a quick break. But when I come back, there's a lot of other new scientific and some more, well, not necessarily science news, but some more news within the health and wellness world that I want to share with you. So keep it locked here. You're listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Health and Wellness Podcast. I'm your host, Pauline. I will be right back.
Are you looking for the very best NFL and college football podcast? Then check out the GSMC Football Podcast. Get the latest football news, both on and off the field. From the NFL draft to trades to the rumor mill to the NFL combines, they got you covered. That's gsmcpodcast.com/football-podcast. Get updates on college rivalries, game day insights, and much, much more. It's football talk the way you want it. This show eats, sleeps, and breathes football. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Golden State Media Concepts Health and Wellness Podcast. Now, I have a new study that may seem for some of you, especially you parents, to be a tad bit on the controversial side. Now, it's always been one of those things that I guess you could say old wives' tales or just rule of thumbs that you don't introduce peanuts to children early at all. It's just one of those things that you, it's always been that until at least they hit the age of 3, if not later, to start introducing peanut products and peanuts to your children. And it's always been that it helped to, you know, withstand, and it just basically what it is that the claim is that the studies have always been that you don't want to introduce peanuts early to your children, at least not until after they hit the age of 3, because you don't want to introduce or open up the potential for your child to have allergic tendencies or allergic reactions to peanuts. But it has been now, in a way, taken back that it's actually better to introduce peanuts and peanut products to your children and babies even early and often. So to actually really introduce and to not really hold back at all, not to have too much reservations as far as, and of course you should always consult your doctor, your pediatrician, your child's medical doctors if they have more than one, to always reference and to always discuss with your doctor and with your child's doctor before doing anything, especially with a newborn and especially with children. But the thing is that despite the rule of thumb and despite the recommendations previously of not introducing peanuts to children at an early age, it has been reported that peanut allergies keep increasing and that 10 years after it was most recently published in 2000, in the year 2000 by the American Academy of Pediatrics saying, to wait to at least after the age of 3 or else you're putting your child at high risk. But within the last 10 years, so like up until now, going on 20 years, actually, 2% of children in the United States still had the allergy. So that is up from having less than 50% of 1%. So less than half of 1% in 1999. So it's still steadily going up regardless of the fact that it has been recommended and that most people do not introduce peanuts, especially here in the United States, to their children early. And so there has been multiple studies conducted in the recent years and it started really in United Kingdom and Australia and has now also been in the United States have also been involved in these studies with testing and trying out introducing peanuts to children earlier. And in one report, it did say that, according to this report published in 2008, it showed that scientists reported that Jewish children in Israel rarely suffered from peanut allergies. And Dr. Gideon Lack, the senior author of that study and a professor at the King's College in London, compared the allergy rates of Israeli Jewish children with those of Jewish children in Britain and found that Jewish children, that the Jewish children in Britain were 10 times as likely to have peanut allergies as Israeli Jewish children. And it was saying that it's basically when it was introduced. And so basically in infancy, according to the study, Israeli children ate foods containing peanuts quite often and very, very early. And whereas children in Great Britain did not. And so that's what kind of triggered and has been the start of this triggering, saying that even as early as 4 to 11 months, so under a year old, introducing peanuts to them to kind of build up. And the idea is to build up a resistance little by little to peanut allergies. And now nut allergies can be very difficult to deal with because, as we know, a lot of places cook in peanut oil. They, fry foods in peanut oil. Peanuts are often found in or other foods are made in factories or made in places that peanuts are also handled. A lot of different cuisines found around the world and things that we enjoy here in the United States often are made with peanuts. Peanut oil or peanut butter is very much prevalent in things that we enjoy every single day. Peanut butter and jelly sandwiches are one of my brother's favorite go-to snacks. And so it's something that has been struggled with. And again, I think that you should always discuss with your pediatrician because, of course, your specific child, your family, and your needs greatly differ from those of others. This is just a study that has come out in regards to perhaps our notion that waiting till after the toddler stage to start introducing peanuts is actually, there's no grounds for it to truly, because if most of the population is following that guideline, however, it's steadily on the rise. It's more than doubled since 1999 to now, present time, when these studies were completed, then, you know, they're suggesting that maybe it's, you know, substantial. So hopefully we will see. It's going to take another 10 to 20 years before we see if these new ideas are better or are worse. And of course, if you're just someone who kind of does their own things, I know that there are some parents that have their own regulations on what their children will or will not consume. That's fine too. It's totally fine too. I just thought that this was a very interesting report because I grew up and a lot of the things that I eat greatly deal with peanuts. I love Snickers. I love Vietnamese food has a lot of peanuts as well. Peanut sauce. We fry a lot of places, like I said, restaurants, fast food places, which I know we're not big on fast food. I know. And we're all trying to be healthy now that it's a new year. However, I'm just stating a lot of places that children go to eat and even us adults do use peanut oil. Peanuts, like, just peanuts are, it's so difficult. And if you suffer from a peanut allergy, I really do hope that, you know, you're able, because I don't know, I just enjoy peanuts so much that if I had a peanut allergy, it would just be so difficult. So hopefully maybe you'll grow out of it. You know, some people grow out of allergies and grow into allergies. So hopefully I'm not one of those that's going to grow into it, because I do enjoy peanuts. So, there are multiple studies out there, so definitely do your research if this is something that you're considering. If you're a new mommy or if you're pregnant or considering being pregnant anytime soon, then this is something that you definitely should discuss with your pediatrician, like I said. So moving on, I wanted to wrap up this episode discussing something that kind of freaks me out, I'm not going to lie, is germs and germy places, because germs freak me out. And I'm really very, very particular when it comes to germs, but I'm always about learning new things that I hate, or learning ways to be more healthy and that will benefit all of us, and sharing them with you guys. And so I wanted to share with you all the top hidden. And that's the kind of part that freaks me out, is because you know that there's certain things that we always consider that are just germy, you know, like door handles or shopping carts, the handles on shopping carts, and not touching the door handle of the bathroom and things like that. But there are other places that we don't even think about that are quite germy. And just, this is just something that I want you guys to know, so that next time that you guys are out and about, you guys can definitely be proactive in preventing touching these places and just staying healthy, because especially right now we're still in the winter season, so we're still dealing with some flu germs, as well as everybody kind of has like a sniffly nose right now, it feels like, around me, as well as a cough and things like that. So just ways for you and your family to stay as germy free as possible. So keep it locked here. I'm going to share those places and some ways to kind of, like, you know, sidestep those things. So keep it locked here. You're listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Health and Wellness Podcast. I will be right back.
Check out the show that's built on the MMA. From the UFC to extreme cage fighting, they got the fights covered. Check out the GSMC MMA podcast. Get the latest news on past or upcoming fights. Join us as we talk to and about some of the biggest names in the MMA, past, present, and future. When it's the fight game, there's just one show to check out. GSMCpodcast.com/MMA-podcast. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit GSMCpodcast.com for more info.
And welcome back, everyone, to the Golden State Media Concepts Health and Wellness Podcast. We are getting ready to wrap up this episode of the show. But before we do, like I said, I wanted to tell you guys, so that you guys can be just as creeped out as me, about where the germiest places are when we go out to eat. Now, first off, I want to remind everyone, when you go out, or not when you go out, but just when you're going about your everyday life, is to always wipe your cell phone down with like a Clorox wipe. Because if you think about it, we take our cell phones. If you're like me, I take my cell phone everywhere. I'm putting it on countertops. I'm putting it on seats, throwing it in my bag. I'm holding it. Other people are holding it. It gets moved. It gets bumped. There is just a million germs, I believe, honestly, living on your cell phone all the time. Any phone, actually. Every time I go to work, I think I've shared this with you guys before. Every time I go to work, I always wipe down the phone, the mouse, the keyboard. I wipe down the table in front of me, the desk in front of me, and things like that. Everything that I'm going to be touching during my shift, I'm wiping it down with Clorox wipes, and even throughout the shift, because there's times when I may go on break or on lunch and somebody else is using my area, somebody else is using the phone that I was just on, I always go back again and I wipe it again. It's no offense to you guys. It's no offense to anyone. I'm just really not into germs. And especially now, right, while it is the winter time and people are just more sick than normal, I always like to stay on top of it. But when going out, I think it's always good to have some wet ones in your, and I love it when you're at the grocery store and they have the wipes out there so that you can wipe down the railing and the handrail of the grocery baskets or whatever it is that you need to do it for. But when you're going out to eat, now, these are some things that you got to kind of, I don't know, I guess you can't really stress too much, but then you should be on top of it. This is just me because I'm weird like this. But the booster seats, if you have children, booster seats that you're putting your kid in, as well as the countertops. So you can always wipe down the countertops yourself. And I know that they wipe them down before you sit down and it looks clean. But is it really with like an antibacterial spray? I don't know. We don't know. It could just be water and soap. It could just be warm water. We don't know. So always wiping that down, especially if you have babies, because I know that people like to just put the food down on the table in front of the baby and the baby's picking it up and eating it. That's cool. I don't really mind. Little kids, especially babies, I think it's so cute when they're feeding themselves. So I really don't have a problem with that. It's just that you may want to wipe the counter down first. And then also, this is something that I try to do, like whether you're at like a bar or whether you're at a restaurant or things like that. Not getting the fruit or the olive dropped into your drink, just because, especially when you're at a bar, if you think about it, they have the cherries, they have the olives, the limes, the lemons, whatever, just in the little bowls or sometimes, and some bars even have it like in front of you while you're sitting at the bar, and then they just plop one of those, you know, strawberries in one of those olives. But people have been breathing and speaking over, maybe even coughing or touching even. I've seen people grab olives out of the container and I was just like, what are you doing? That's just not cool. But people do that too, as well as so, you know, not having those olives dropped in there. But I mean, if you don't really care, if you're one of those people that like the olives and think that the alcohol is going to kill all the germs, hey, do you, boo. And then also, this is one thing that kind of bothers me the most, and I'm very particular about this, and I try. Now, this is the other thing, is it's okay to be as healthy and as sanitary as you want to be, and especially myself, because I'm really particular about germs. But you also have to be careful that you don't like offend others or you don't make other people feel uncomfortable. I try very, very hard not to do that. However, I don't like it. Like, I oftentimes will ask for a straw when I'm drinking out of a cup or anything like that, because I just don't know how well they wash the dishes. And then also for to-go utensils. And now some of you guys are probably like, what in the world? I don't know. It's just me, because I don't know. It just bothers me that somebody else ate off this fork and I don't know how many times, and I don't know where from, and I don't know. It just bothers me. And so that's just me. So I just am very particular, especially about the utensils. You may or may not be, and that's totally fine, and it's totally up to you. But that's just me, is that a lot of times I try to just have to-go utensils that I use. Like, and it's not that big of a deal. You can just ask the server, the waiter, the waitress, whatever, ask them for some to-go utensils, and you can just eat with that. And then, yeah, I guess you could argue if you're trying to eat steak that you can't really cut with it. So I guess you win some, you lose some. But I'm just saying, that's just me. And that's one way, because I don't think people think about it, that these forks have been in multiple mouths, multiple times, multiple years. Blah, just yucky to me. Anyways, but So that is one thing that I, but then I guess you can't always, you know, you can't totally germ proof your entire life. And it, I do also get the argument that if you're so sanitary and so particular about germ proofing your life and germ proofing your kids, that you actually put yourself at risk to being more susceptible, that when you do come in contact with bacteria, germs, and things like that, that you always get sick or you always have a reaction to things. So I get that too. Everything needs a really healthy balance. I agree. But these are just some things that I think about and some things that I know that others think about, is at least just wiping, you know, the handles down or when you're at work, especially if you work at a desk or you work with people, always keeping hand sanitizer nearby, especially if you work with people, because people are always touching, grabbing, moving, shifting things. And that's okay. It really is, because that's just life. Everybody's going to touch everything. But just trying to keep yourself as healthy as possible, especially during this flu season. And the one thing that is always stated year in and year out, all year long, no matter how old or where you come from, is simply just washing your hands. Just making sure that your hands are washed. When you go to the restroom, wash your hands. When you get done working outside, wash your hands. If you cough, wash your hands. It's not that difficult. I actually enjoy washing my hands, especially during the cold time, the winter time like now, because the warm water just feels so good. It just makes me feel good in the inside. So just keep your hands washed. People sing, what is it, the alphabet, when or happy birthday. If you sing happy birthday, is that when you brush your teeth? One of them, just wash your hands. I'm not sure if you're supposed to sing happy birthday or count or say the alphabet, but one of those is what you do when you wash your hands. The other is what you do when you brush your teeth. I guess you could do both for both. Anyway, so that's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. I hope you guys have enjoyed your new organ, as well as the fact that you can now eat as many Snickers as you want, because we're pulling back on the peanut regulations, but just make sure you wash your hands. So that's going to do it for this episode. I'm your host, Pauline. You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Health and Wellness Podcast. I'll talk to you guys next time.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Health and Wellness Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.